Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 7. Yes, it's getting to the point where I'm actually forgetting how much we've done. It's been a week since we've last bullshitted about Asian cinema. Got anything new happening in your lives?
Well, in Nobel Peace Prize, or not Nobel Prize land, is not happening much. We're just catching up on movies and getting ready for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And not buying anyone any Hong Kong movies for Christmas because no one near me likes Hong Kong movies. and no one can buy me Hong Kong movies because no one knows what I actually watch, what I like. Mm-hmm. So I'm playing it safe.
So you won't expect a copy of Young and Dangerous this year?
Well, I'm asking in your direction then, Stu. Should I expect a copy of Young and Dangerous this year?
Maybe. I think I still have Mike's address somewhere.
At any rate,
that's quite a scared giggle.
At any rate, that's what Ken is doing. What's Mike doing? What was Mike doing yesterday, I wonder? I'm quite curious.
I was watching Led Zeppelin, as you well know, Kenneth. Well, and it was amazing. 2 hours of solid, colossal rock.
Arena rock.
Yeah, the best kind. Absolutely shattered. And for any, I just thought about something as well. For any English listeners who are interested in football, I saw Alan Kirbishley at the gig. It's not spectacularly interesting, but it's about as close as I got to any celeb spotting yesterday.
Wasn't Geldof there?
Yeah, well, apparently Dave Grohl and Marilyn Manson, the Gallaghers, Kate Moss, tons of people turned up, but obviously I was in with the plebs, so I didn't get anywhere near the VIPs.
Yeah.
They didn't mention anything about their representative from Green Fan DVD in the paper I read today. They had everyone lined up, but not Green Fan DVD. That was kind of disappointing.
I like to keep a low profile, to be honest, Ken.
Yeah. You shouldn't let fame corrupt you yet.
I didn't want the attention to be taken away from, you know, Zeppelin.
Sound.
Yeah.
Yes, because I'm sure Marilyn Manson was wondering where his copy of Ninja in Ancient China is.
Oh, yeah. I bet he was as well. He's a big Kung Fu fan, is Marilyn.
That's not too far-fetched, then. What's up with you, Stu?
Nothing much, the usual. Just chilling, neglecting movies. And yeah, that was it. Some questions this week, which we came up with, because our poor form has been neglected by the public. The thousands of people that tune into Podcast on Fire daily still neglect our forum. Sniff, sniff.
We're on iTunes right now, so that's probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Kenneth from SoGoodReviews.com dropped in a question. He asked, how would you compare the current Hong Kong movies as entertainment value compared to what they were 10, 20 years ago? I think that question will be directed to Mike.
Okay. So there is a slight problem with that, which is I haven't watched a recent Hong Kong film for about 6 months.
Stuck in your Shaw Brothers phase.
Yeah, well, watching prospective films that I'd want to buy. Mm-hmm. You know, rights and Shaw Brothers films. So I'm going to have a slight problem answering that. I think the most recent film I watched was Sharpo Lang when it came out. In fact.
But it's a good film to mention, Mike. That particular movie, I think many people were thrown back to sort of 10, 20 years ago, where, you know, with these gritty police actioners and that, you know, were dark throughout and had some not martial arts action per se, but action that sort of fit that particular movie. I mean, you have the Tiger Cage movies, or at least the first one, which is have no connection to the second one. Sort of a dark film and you know, painful violence and a fight or two here and there. And when I'm thinking about that question as well, I know this for a fact though, that I can easily watch movies from 10, 20 years ago that were, in essence, crap, and still get through them somehow without any problems. Because usually you're distracted by an element like action, or when they do this classic Hong Kong cinema thing of just breaking, let's say, the comedy mood and injecting drama or injecting, you know, some really tough violence. So these old movies where sort of rules didn't apply because the audience were used to this, they were expecting these switcheroos, if you will, in atmosphere. I have an easier time watching those, that even those that I know beforehand that are crap. And nowadays it's different. I'm looking at the smaller movies coming out, the smaller gangster movies coming out, and I have a more tough time approaching them, buying DVDs or buying the VCDs, and getting through them, because it is different to what it was. I'm getting more entertainment from the old movies, despite them being rough and uneven and everything like that. So, and I don't think that's due to all the stars, not solely due to all the stars leaving and the talent pool is different, but there is something about, you know, the 80s, 90s era when they were producing so many movies.
Mm-hmm. Would you think maybe a certain kind of naive but very energetic charm maybe that the films in the 80s and 70s had, and that nowadays they're a bit more serious and possibly slicker, a bit more like Hollywood. Maybe they're lacking that kind of that excitement and ingenuity that the 80s and 70s film showed.
I think so. I mean, they weren't too concerned with Western eyes looking in for the longest of time, to be honest. I think, of course, people started to notice, obviously going back to Bruce Lee and the Shaw Brothers films getting exposure in the West, but for the longest time, if you move on through the 80s with Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung, or any filmmaker really, they weren't expecting exposure, so they were doing the very local things. And nowadays, even though they're doing local movies, local small movies, gangster movies, it's not that... don't know if I want to call it the wild era of the 80s and 90s. My mind is sort of focusing on them right now, but it has something to do with, I guess, struggling to find the words, but they're, you know, as you said, Mike, there's a difference in the way they approach movies, I guess, the filmmakers, compared to, let's go back to 1995 or 96, or... that was still an era where all different kind of wild movies came out, and still a kind of, let's say, category 3 type of film came out during that time, that is very much different to the way they create category 3 movies now. That's also a difference, but I think you definitely have a point there, Mike.
Me being a big action fan, especially like martial arts, kung fu stuff, I think there's, back in the 70s and 80s, there was a definite, you know, because there was such small budgets and, you know, didn't have special effects, that kind of thing, that you had to be entertaining and, you know, through physical ability and inventiveness. You know, doing everything on set and in front of the camera. Whereas, I think a lot of filmmakers now, attitude is, you know, we'll fix it in post. You know, we can make things more exciting and add to it and you know, with CGI effects.
Yeah, it's certainly that.
You know, I don't know, I think maybe even a little bit lazy from a lot of filmmakers. Back in the 80s and stuff, with the Jackie Chan and Sammo films, not just the main actors, but there were stuntmen doing some ridiculous stunts and taking full contact hits and things like that. I know there's a shortage of people who are willing to do that kind of craziness nowadays, with it, lots of insurance involved and money, and I think it's just a lot slicker and a lot more professional, and maybe that loses some of the rawness and excitement that there was with action films of that period anyway.
I think I'm going to ask Stu, maybe you have the best memory here. I'm thinking about Flashpoint in that regard, where since Mike is mentioning the sort of the bone crunching stunts and what have you, I got the impression from watching one of the trailers for Flashpoint that they focused on that at least to a slight degree. You know, falling through crates or falling down and hitting a pole on your way down to the ground. So did Flashpoint attempt to echo the kind of things Mike mentioned, that what stuntmen did, or what we saw in older films, or is just a minor thing in a minor action scene in Flashpoint?
No, they did. That's what they tried to get across quite a lot in the film, was the hard hitting action and stunts. There are quite a lot of points where almost some fighters in the movie have superhuman strength, be able to. I don't even think it was. There was these metal lockers and put a big dent in it with a kick, but there are some of the points where someone gets kicked back, but they bang into a pillar or off the edge of a table or on the corner of a wall before hitting the floor.
And that's seemingly real as well. Maybe some wire work, wire removal, of course, but it is seemingly them taking the fall.
Yeah. But I think there is actually little wire use to it from what I could remember. The only time I could remember them using wires and CGI wasn't in the fight scenes. Which I did find different, but the action, I appreciate the movie a lot more watching the ending credits than. Like,
oh, they do a. I'll take things there with bloopers and.
Yeah,
stuff.
There's a segment on the special features DVD which focuses on the action of the movie and is sort of just Donnie Yen explaining the amount of training, and there's lots of training footage of Donnie Yen going against people with different martial arts, him training. It was sort of like freestyle wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, and he's got like almost like his own action team built up of like Japanese action choreographers, Hong Kong choreographers, people from Britain as well. He's got his own select team when it comes to doing action in his movies nowadays. And from watching the footage and then watching back at the film, it is actually quite impressive. Like, the effort he's put in is standing out a lot more than probably any other action film we'll see nowadays.
It sounds reassuring, I think. Obviously, I think him being in the Tiger Cage films, if we're going back to that, he has the memory of what kind of talent they had back then that they could employ to do these kind of movies and get the feel to the audience of, you know, what the audience would remember from these films entertainment wise and I think the team of Donnie Yen and obviously director Wilson Yip, since they started making movies together here with SPL Dragon Tiger Gate, but rather SPL and Flashpoint, to be honest, that they are looking back at what they enjoyed doing, seeing, right, and trying to bring it back with the personnel that they have, or rather import personnel. You see, as you're saying, that Donnie Yen has a team of different nationalities, and it's not a bad thing for someone to utilize what they have, even if it's, you know, a very limited talent pool, and try and still make these films and mix it up a bit. I mean, Hong Kong cinema still has a lot going for it, but necessarily not action wise. It seems like they have to focus quite a bit nowadays to really pull it off. It's not like they were making 50 of these. They are not making 50 of these movies now.
Yeah.
Like it felt like they were doing back in the day. You could expect at least maybe one of these types of scenes in any movie that they now have to focus quite a bit to actually achieve and plan and try to get into movies somehow. At least one per year. Which sounds totally depressing, but you know, you'll have to deal with the Hong Kong cinema scene as it is now. And but looking at SPL and Flashpoint, I've only seen the former. They're onto something, definitely. Yeah. With SPL, I think if they can keep their bones intact, I guess I think that they're onto something. And I'm very curious to see what they have in store next. Have they announced any project yet, Donnie Yen and or Wilson Yip?
Not that I know of. I don't know if this is just going to be left as like a trilogy, or if they still have more ideas to whip out there.
So this was a prequel to SPL or sequel?
I've read that somewhere, but it makes sense. But Donnie Yen's put in as has a different character name.
Oh.
Which I think it might have been originally planned when it was still known as The City Without Mercy. They might have went under a rewrite.
I believe the rumours are that, is it Donnie Yen's working on, is it a remake of Painted Skin with Yip Wei Shun?
You're correct, yes. They did a press conference recently, so that is a go. Painted Skin was, I think it's based on a literary work, or rather a collection of stories, but it was made into a movie in the 90s, the last movie, King Hu, the classic Shaw Brothers director, classic Taiwan director, did Touch of Zen, Fate of Lee Khan, Come Drink With Me. Painted Skin was his last film in 1993 with Sam Hung and Joey Wong. Fairly atmospheric, but nothing someone will remember from the era of, you know, Waifu, Once Upon a Time in China, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But they're making at least that story, maybe not the movie itself.
I think there's, getting back to the action you were just talking about, there's one man, and particularly one responsible for the... feels a little bit like a move back towards the 80s kind of hard-hitting, you know, tough action. And I think that's Tony Jaa and Ong Bak. Because, you know, obviously that came out of nowhere and was a massive hit and really popular worldwide as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for that is Tony Jaa and the kind of full contact, very aggressive, really visceral, hard-hitting action. I think Donnie Yen saw that and was like, yeah, well, that's just like what Sammo was doing back in the 80s and what I've done before. And so, you know, it's gone back to what Hong Kong used to do, mm-hmm, because it's in vogue and it's shown that it's that kind of action can still be massively popular.
And SPL was a fair hit as well, the local box office. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they got people to go to the cinema. There was this theory, or not theory, but thought that Donnie Yen, or rather Hong Kong cinema, felt the need to respond to what Thai cinema was doing to show that they still got it. And obviously that's not a bad thing to get a good movie out, because SPL I thought was a good movie. It was a good mixture. But the I think the buzz on the internet was that now Hong Kong has to show that they still have it, still got it. But you know, you can't be that childish about it either. You know, it might have been a good timing to follow in the follow Ong Bak when SPL came out, but you know, don't get all stressed out to try and outdo Ong Bak. And I don't think SPL really, when looking at it, did. It was just a different movie, different kind of action, you know.
Different style, but a definite move towards, you know, real martial artists doing it on camera. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with a lot of aggression and hard hits.
And what better guy to bring in than obviously Sammo, and him doing a fight as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the original king, isn't he, of the hard hitting kind of Hong Kong action style?
Yeah, exactly. I've always gotten that impression that through watching different Sammo movies, that there is this element of really hard hitting choreography.
Half the time it's him that's being hit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, if you have a little perusal on YouTube, you'll see plenty of videos of outtakes coming from Japanese laser discs and that kind of thing from a lot of Sammo's films from the 80s, with Sammo and various stuntmen getting nailed pretty hard and knocked out and things like that.
Any particular golden clip there that you remember, Mike, from a particular movie? Or?
Well, there's definitely a couple. There's one from, I believe it's My Lucky Stars, where there's one guy who has to get kicked. Either, I think he kicks and falls into a table.
Right.
But there's a clip, if you look for that on the internet, and the guy takes a, pretty sure I got this right anyway, he takes a really hard kick and basically knocks himself out with this really badass fall that he has to do. Also, there's another one, I can't remember what film it's from, but it's a crazy stunt where it's a fall off a building and then landing on top of a car and then bouncing off into the road as another car approaches.
I remember that stunt, but it might be a similar stunt in another movie that I saw quite recently, but there was no Sammo, Jackie or Yung Bu film. It was just one of these jumped up a bridge, but bounced off a car and then down, straight down in the pavement. But obviously, I think they've done similar stunts like that. But
there's a classic one on YouTube as well. I can remember a bit more detail about, rather than that pretty poor, vague description I just gave of that one. It's Conan Lee from, is it Tiger on the Beat 2?
Yep.
Where he has to, have you seen this one, Stu?
Yeah, I saw the film like
right
a few months ago.
In fact, it's actually in the film, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It's not an outtake, it's where he jumps onto, is it a lamppost he's trying to hold onto?
Mm.
And then he just falls and crunches into the pavement.
And the next cut is him getting up, you know, it's probably months later, a year later, dusting himself off probably and just continue to run. It's movie magic.
Yeah.
But he was seriously fucked up after that one. He couldn't do quite as much as what was required of him throughout the rest of the filming. They probably hadn't done the finale yet.
Well, I think to a certain degree it kind of limited his career afterwards, from what I've heard. Mm-hmm. Because he was actually kind of permanently injured from it.
Beside from having the rep of being difficult to work with.
Yeah.
But that actually is a quite an underrated film in terms of action anyway, Tiger on the Beat 2. It's not a good film, it's not as fun film as the first one. You don't have the giant fat Conan Lee banter and Chiang-Fat being a total loon throughout the film, but it has a few things worth seeing. I think it's a Conan Lee fights during the finale on broken glass, which is looks sort of painful. I don't know if he's fighting Gordon Lau or not. It's a finale at a sort of bus garage, and they throw. It's another glass story right there, to echo the nickname for the police story finale. And they also throw the leading lady through some glass akin to what they did with Bridget Lin in Police Story. I think it's Ellen Chan or something like that, and she really takes a beating during that film, doing some quite painful stunts going through not real glass, but looked like it hurt a bit anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't think they use that, I don't know if they call it a candy glass that they use nowadays that basically break when you look at it. I think that was I think it was a bit more painful to go through it during these days, but based on what Hong Kong cinema had to work with. I mean, looking at the finale of Police Story, that looks painful. Or they sell it well. I don't know.
Probably a bit of both.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when Jackie goes through the glass with his head, when he shatters the glass.
Yeah.
Towards camera. No, it might be a bit of both, as Mike says, but. Ooh. So suffering for your art. And unfortunately, Tag on the Beat was not much art outside of the action. But going back to Tony Jaa, I've seen Ong Bak. I've not seen the other film he did, that was retitled The Protector. I'm saying that because I'm not going to try and pronounce the name it actually had. Tom Jung something. I hope Tony Jaa develops into something more charismatic, in all honesty. I think he's such an absolutely stunning physical performer, but I hope he can develop into sort of a genuine movie star as well. I mean, we're not talking about a Jackie Chan charisma or Sammo Hung charisma there from the start, but based on what he has, I really hope he does something that will make him sort of a genuine cinematic power, and not just same old after, you know, 5, 6, 7 films.
But
then again, I haven't seen his second film, so I don't know if it's sort of a step up from Ong Bak.
Well, his performance isn't a lot different. It's probably a little bit better, but the film's pretty damn poor. It's a lot worse story-wise. It's a little bit amateurish, to be honest. I mean, the action is amazing.
And I'm not talking about them making sort of a great character piece and an action film at the same time, but I was not taken aback as such by him, but taken aback by the physical stuff I saw.
I think he's... I know what you mean, Ken. I think he's got I definitely think he's got the potential, if he works at it. I don't know if you've either seen The Bodyguard, or Bodyguard 2, the Pech Thai Wong Kam Lao, directed and starred film. He's the guy from the comedy presence, the kind of chubby fella from Ong Bak and Warrior King, aka Protector, aka Tom Jung-ung.
But no, I've not seen nothing.
Right, in The Bodyguard 2, Tony's got another cameo where he's playing his character from Warrior King, Protector, and it's actually quite funny. I think he's pretty funny in that little cameo. And if you've seen the clips of him on YouTube rapping, I think he's definitely got a few hidden talents, I reckon.
Have they forced him to do that for promotion in America? Or
no, he's on
Thai rap.
yeah. He's on a Thai talk show. So I'm not entirely sure what they're talking about, but then they ask him something and he starts just rapping. And starts getting up and getting the crowd into it. Another clip you can check before on YouTube. But it shows him kind of... Obviously, in the films he's done so far, he does nothing really but, you know, look a bit innocent and lost, shout a lot and get really pissed off and elbow people. But I think, you know, it's nice to see a little bit of a different side to him in some of the clips you can find on YouTube. Mm. Just hope he can work on it and bring it to his film roles a bit more. Show some variation.
Is he going into directing as well? Himself?
Yeah, he's directing Ong Bak 2, or he's directed it and co-choreographing it with Panna Ritikai, his mentor and the choreographer on his other two big films.
Mm. I saw that basically the other Thai action movie of this new millennium, I guess, I saw was Born to Fight.
Yeah.
Which I loved some of the elements in it before it was tiring, to be honest, in the long run. But I loved specifically the car stunt in the beginning, or where they fall off trucks. They fall off one truck and bounce onto the other truck and then onto the ground.
Those stunts are insane.
Seemingly real. I mean, I might be fooled, but that did not look like a blue screen or green screen shot. That they just had to fall in the right place to avoid getting their heads crushed or hands crushed by the truck that was going alongside. But I thought it was a bit tiring, to be honest, the Born to Fight. But again, that had elements that I really seriously enjoyed, but didn't really convert me into watching, you know, the older Thai stuff, or looking forward greatly to the new Thai stuff. And I hope not only Tony Jaa, but the industry as a whole, try to look at what we can do better rather than walk in the same footsteps of the one that made that action cinema break.
Picking up from a past podcast, people are now becoming aware that the first few batches of Shaw Brothers Celestial Remasters released, I think, 2003, 2004, are now turning up out of press. So my question to you guys is, is this news encouraging you to pick up the Shaw Brothers films whilst you still can? Or do you feel safe relying on labels such as Dragon Dynasty to bring it the cream of the crop for you?
You going to run with that one first, Kenneth?
Yeah, sure. I've actually divided in that regard, because I really, really appreciate that Celestial started to bring these Shaw Brothers films out, because I think the first ones came out in 2002. First ones were like Come Drink With Me, the heroic ones, Killer Clans. I mean, what better start to get familiar with Shaw Brothers films than to watching those particular films from three different really, really good directors with the top stars and everything. And, you know, I bought a fair few. I've stopped doing it now. And after a while, it became really apparent that Celestial really were not really being friendly towards the fans. I'm mainly talking about they really destroyed some of the movies by adding these 5.1 sounds and really went over the top with their new effects and so forth. So part of me is not really anxious to go out and buy everything just to see it, because I really think what they did to some of these films, like Chinese Boxer, is really unbelievable what they did sound-wise to that film on DVD. And I've no desire to buy it on VCD. I'd rather, if I'm going to buy a lot of titles, I'd rather focus on sort of the batch from 1 year and back, or 2 years and back, because they really abandoned that idea of making Dolby Digital 5.1 for the kids to notice, for the kids to watch, to make it hip and everything. To still answer the question, I have faith still that the best titles from the best directors are still going to turn up somewhere. And even though they might not turn up on English subtitled DVDs, there's always the option of, you know, even though people are against it in some respects, to create your own DVD, because there are subtitles out there on the internet. And I think, in my opinion, I don't think I will miss out on that much when they do go out of print. But then again, you never know. If some other distributor do want to come in Hong Kong and say, we'll pick this up. And to sum it up, I've no hurry to get it while I still can. And I know for a fact that, as you said, the last podcast, Mike, the Media Blaster deal does include quite a bit of titles that are must-buys. And they will be even more attractive now that they come out on DVD in America, hopefully. So I'll gladly wait for stuff like Heroes 2. I know that's being worked on by Media Blasters. So I'm playing it cool, and I might regret it. But really, my wallet is not that big either to pick up, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 titles that I know I want. Just because they're going out of print. That's just a fact.
Well, I'd probably say if there's stuff that you really do want, then I would recommend buying the IVLs while they're available. Just for the fact that you can't be sure if there are going to be companies releasing them on DVD, I don't think. Cause, I mean, okay, so Dragon Dynasty or the Weinstein Company own the rights to about 50 Shaw Brothers films, but there's certainly no guarantee. In fact, I doubt they will release all of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all dependent on sales and things like that. So, I mean, if there's stinking sales, then there might be a chance that they just shelve it and just not bother.
Niche genre, after all.
What? Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, Momentum in the UK. They released 6 Shaw Brothers films on DVD. Mm-hmm. Each they came with a little booklet advertising what films they had.
And they had about 20 films.
Yeah, I think it's 24. I think listed in the booklet.
Right.
And these 6 films were released a couple of years ago, and there hasn't been any more seen since, because the original 6 sold very poorly due to a variety of reasons. But, you know, initially you see that booklet and think, nice, 24 titles, no need to buy the IVLs. But then, like I said, you never know what's going to happen in the future. Mm. I mean, personally, I'm not that bothered about them going out of print, because, you know, there's... What, Celestial released, I mean, IVL released about 550 DVDs, different films.
And at least 100 of those must be, you know, must-haves.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a challenge in itself. I think I have like 30 myself. And that's taking up a lot of shelf space in itself.
Yeah, so, I mean, personally, I've got so many films that I want to see that the out-of-print ones aren't a priority for me. And I think you're right about the big titles. If the ones you're interested in, like Five Venoms or Five Element Ninja, Kid with the Golden Arm, or, you know, One-Armed Swordsman. Well, that's already out, but you know what I mean? The big, more famous titles. Mm. I think they probably will get a release somewhere.
You really have to... Well, this is how I work, really. When approaching Shaw Brothers, I wanted to get to the best first, and perhaps do, you know, a dip in or two amongst the unknown stuff from the unknown directors. But in the end, I still focused on like the Chang Cheh films I wanted to see, the Lau Garland films that I wanted to see, which was basically all the films Lau Garland did at Shaw Brothers. The Choi Yun films, also directors like Kwai Chi Hung, did Kill Snakes and Bamboo House of Dolls, Ghost Eyes. These really sort of exploitation films. So it's really too vast to try and focus on all at once. And I think I've gotten to a fair amount of those that I want to, focus on, but not obviously not enough. Looking at the filmographies of Chang-Chi and Cho-Yun, made like a ton of films.
Far too much.
Yeah, not everyone a classic. I mean, I think it's fair to say that both of those, Chang-Chi and Cho-Yun, had uneven filmographies because, you know, they were asked to produce, direct so many movies for Shaw Brothers, so obviously it's going to be a turkey or two in there. But it's actually fun, speaking of that, have either of you seen the Chang-Chi movies, Four Riders and Duel of Fists?
I've seen neither.
No.
It's, both Iron Triangle films, early 70s.
Is Duel of Fists the, I say modern, but actually set in the 70s one with the, they do some Thai boxing or something like that?
Yeah, it is set in Thailand. It's really fun to watch these films because obviously it's either that these are films that Chang-Chi was asked to, we need to have another Dick Lung, David Chang film out on the market, do one. or he's just, you know, while he has a chance to go to Thailand or shoot in exotic places, why not just don't give a flying fuck about logic and detail and just do a movie, just a fun movie without any sense at all. Just be lazy for one moment and then churn out something like Blood Brothers next. You know, which is obviously one of the greatest Shaw Brothers films ever made. But I even thought of a question right now. Having spoken of Blood Brothers, Peter Chan's new film, Warlords,
right,
is reportedly a remake or, again, a reimagining of Blood Brothers. Mm-hmm. I've actually not watched any of the trailers, but have either of you seen the trailers and seen the original too? And what's your thought on the remake?
I've followed it partly. I remember watching the leaked trailer from earlier in the year. I think it was in April, but I've not really picked up on anything else since then. But mainly that, what we got to see from that leaked video was basically just a teaser, which just showed you sort of a montage of action sequences, which mainly just focused on just mass war. It wasn't like just a shot of Jet Li and Andy Lau throwing kicks, it was just thousands of people running at each other. But I have also seen a dubbed VHS of Blood Brothers, and it is a really good film. But I do think it did kind of slow up in the middle. But still, I think it had an incredible finale. Thinking of the remake, as you said, it's more of a reimagining because
I'm not really sure what Peter Chan is trying to do, to be honest. I'm not going to say either. That's a story template that's been used. So you have that remake of a classic film, then that could help you in the end. Big star cast, obviously, Andy Lau, Jet Li, Takeshi Kaneshiro, and stuff like that. So, but did it seem like one of these epic films, or it didn't really give a hint of being, you know, a small drama at the same time? Or
it's definitely been aimed as a epic film, but not in the way of past epic films, which included the same cast like Flying Daggers and Hero. Obviously, this is a film where the action's grounded. It's probably being treated more as an epic film in a way like Musa the Warrior.
I hope you have seen Blood Brothers, Mike, or is that in the file? The original?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Really?
That's on my to-watch pile. Yeah, I was having this. Go slightly off topic but on topic at the same time. I was having a discussion with somebody the other day, a friend of mine who's as a massive Kung Fu film fan, as we sat in my house, and I asked him to look through my collection, which is fairly large, to see if there's any films that he, you know, he hadn't seen or didn't already own that he wanted to watch, and he couldn't find one. And I think I'm worried that I'm going to get to the point, being a kung fu film fan anyway, and obviously those kind of films aren't made anymore, that I'm going to have watched all the classics and I won't have anything to look forward to. You know, I'll just be watching cheap Taiwanese crud, desperately hoping to find a hidden gem. So I'm kind of
slowing down then, and using a method to not...
Well, I'm mixing up the cheap Taiwanese crud with the classics. So I'm kind of, you know, rather than using up all the classics straight away, I've got like a steady stream of crud and classic, which should last me a long time. So yeah, there's quite a few classic films that I want to get round to watching, but I just haven't yet. So no, that's the very long answer to say no, I haven't seen Blood Brothers yet.
Probably not necessary to see that to appreciate Warlords, if it is indeed something to appreciate. Reviews should be coming in soon. I believe that one should premiere before the end of the year. We were wrong about CJ7, and I guess I have to eat my words on that one in worst case, but I'm quite sure that it is...
It's out this month, isn't it? I'm sure. Warlords.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If it is just before Christmas, if they're aiming for it to be a Christmas release, along with stuff like Mad Detective, Johnny Tofilm. So there are some fairly big titles coming out of Hong Kong now before 2007 has ended. And as we were informed, CJ7 will open the year on a high note, hopefully. At least box office-wise. But your collection of the Celestial DVDs, Stu, is... You said you haven't watched too many films, so you haven't bought, like, 200 of them that are sitting on the pile.
I've probably not even breached 10. I really neglected them to the point where I might have to be that person who has to buy them whilst they're still available. I don't know, I've never had the urge just to buy the film because it's a Shaw Brothers film or because it has, like, the Iron Triangle in it. But I was just seeing them throughout time, just coming across one or just finding a good trailer, getting a lens of it for a pal and enjoying the film. That I do know that there's noteworthy stuff, but never had the ambitious streak just to go out there and start buying all the Alexander Fu Sheng flicks and any film that Gordon Liu ain't got hair on his head.
Few. Very few.
Yeah.
Is there a cool wig in Lady is the Boss, I think. La Galang film. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very poor wig, to be honest. I think he was asked to keep his hair short. and Gordon's hair is still short.
Mm-hmm. But there, I think there's actually just been the one Shaw Brothers film which I did, like, keep, like, set and waited for it to come out, and it was actually Fast Fingers, which was sort of a kung fu comedy with Chin Soo Ho and Chiang Kam.
Wasn't Bill Tung in that one as well?
Yeah, maybe, I think so. Yeah, I think it was like a group of swindlers, and he was sort of, I don't think it was the dad, but it was more like a Sifu type role, was it not?
I've actually not seen it. I just have an image in my head of pickpockets, basically.
Yeah, he is kind of the guy who showed them the way. Leading on to usually our third segment of the show is our latest films watched. So, everyone knows this by now. Mike, seen any good films recently that you'd like to comment on?
Or that you hated?
Exactly.
Oh, there's plenty of those.
Well, a select few then.
I watched Shaolin versus Lama, and
I just ask you something straight off the bat here, Mike, or yeah, if you want to keep it as a secret, is there a fight with an actual llama in the film?
I can confirm that, unfortunately, there are no actual hairy llamas in it.
It's just fighting style?
It's Tibetan llamas, isn't it? Who are, you know, as in the Dalai Lama.
Right.
You know, Tibetan monks who also had their own kind of fighting style.
Oh.
The classic line in it is, we llamas are the traditional enemy of Shaolin, I believe. I tend to have this habit of putting on films late at night, probably too late, mm-hmm. and falling asleep like halfway through, or losing concentration and having to turn it off, knowing that, you know, if I saw something good, I probably wouldn't remember it in the morning anyway. And I started watching Shaolin vs. Llama a while back, and it got to... Have either of you seen it?
No.
It gets to a bit where... It's a little bit like the Victim, the Sammo Hung film. Alexander Lo Rey is a kind of martial artist, a good quality one, who's looking for a new teacher. Anybody, you know, who he can't beat in a fight will then be his teacher. So, you know, he starts off whooping some teachers until he meets this Buddhist monk who slaps him down really easily. And so he wants to be his master. And it gets to a bit where he's trying his best to lure him with... he's not a conventional master. He likes eating meat. Or conventional Buddhist likes eating meat and drinking wine. So they're trying to tease him with this chicken. And you get like a comedy fight with a chicken. And it gets to some, what I would call, well, you know, a term that's been used a few times around forums, kung foolery.
Mm.
Just some, that kind of, you know, that kind of dire, well, occasionally good, but a lot of the time, dire, usually lowbrow, stupid humour that, you know, drags the second act down before everybody starts kicking ass in the third. So I'd actually got to that point where Alexander Lo Rey was sucking on the foot of the Buddhist monk while gurning and pulling some stupid faces. And I thought, I can see where this is heading. And so just went to bed. And it took me a while to pick it up again. But actually, thankfully, that the kung fu comedy only lasts a few minutes. And then what you're left with is definitely in the top, you know, five independent kung fu films ever made, if not the best kung fu films ever made. It's packed.
It's just with... made by, is it Robert Tai or Lee Chunam?
Blimey, I should know this offhand.
Either one of those should have been involved.
It's Lee Chunam.
Right. Okay.
It's just a great kung fu action film. Lots of really good action. A nice story of, you know, betrayal, revenge, that kind of stuff. And the action and the fights just keep building and building until a really, really awesome finale. And that's definitely something I would heartily recommend to anybody who hasn't watched it. It's definitely in the top few kung fu films, independent kung fu films ever made.
Are there even widescreen sources available for Shaolin vs. Llama?
No. I think that's one of the films that's much wanted by fans, is a widescreen version of Shaolin vs. Llama. Because as far as I know, you can only get a full-screen English dubbed version, so there isn't an original language wide version available anywhere. Which is
not
a big
fussy...
shame.
In all honesty, I wouldn't be too fussy about watching this in Mandarin, which I presume it is dubbed in Mandarin originally. One could probably survive English easily with that kind of film.
The English dub is pretty good on it.
Serious when it needs to, and it's goofy and wacky when it needs to. Should.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Not Taiwan crud, then.
Definitely not Taiwan crud. Taiwan gold. It definitely gets my seal of approval.
But there is this toughness to watching films like that, where that mixes the kung fu comedy with the kung fu. You know, you mentioned Dance of the Drunk Mantis last time. That is obviously a grating film to get through because the comedy is so broad and so annoying. I mean, after Snake and Eagle Shadow, stuff like that, it came and went in terms of quality, how bearable the comedy was in these films. And the Taiwan films or Hong Kong films, they really probably didn't care that much to make good comedy, fun comedy. Just had to be there and be exaggerated to some degree.
Well, I think good comedy takes probably a lot of time and effort to pull off, whereas if you're knocking out a film in, you know, a month or less than that, and typically, as would happen in a lot of Asian films of the period, you didn't have a script finished when you started shooting. It's much easier to, you know, have some pratfalls and fart jokes and comedy basics that you don't need to put much thought or effort into actually dropping in there. But once you've seen them about, you know, if you've seen enough kung fu films, you've seen the same jokes over and over again, it gets very tiresome. But for, like I said, thankfully, the kung fu comedy is—it's not the main focus of the film. It's you know, there's a little bit of it sprinkled here and there.
I can't really imagine what I know. Alexander Lowray, I've seen in a few films, and in one of my favorite Robert Tai movies, or rather TV series, Ninja Final Duel.
Right. Yeah.
That is really Taiwan madness, to be honest. but Alexander Lowray really seemed to play these stoic characters, serious characters. I can't really see him pulling faces and acting all exaggerated and being a clown.
But he's pretty stoic and serious throughout. It's just, you know, a couple of scenes here and there.
Right.
A Ninja in Final Duel is obviously was an insane production. I think, is it 12 hours long?
It was a TV series, and I believe some collectors have a 12-hour long cut. Whether or not that's actually an approved cut in terms of what actually played on TV, I don't know. But watching the available print, I think it's still on DVD in America by Crash. It's a full screen version, dubbed in English. It's one of the craziest things you'll ever see. I mean, if you mentioned flying water spiders, that's one element. naked kung fu fights and black Buddhist monk characters, actual sort of like not gangster characters, but straight out of you know, a 70s blaxploitation movie, walking around saying stuff like, "She's ash now, you don't give me no trash." and that's in the English dub, so I don't imagine they actually dubbed in some Mandarin similar things there. It's just meant to be that character anyway. It's meant to sound, meant to speak English. So Ninja Final Duel, even in truncated form, 90 minutes, that's really a lot of madness in one.
I believe Toby Russell appears in that film as well.
There are Westerners. I'm not familiar with Toby, not seen his face, but there are Westerners in that cut of Ninja Final Duel. But whether Toby is still in the 90 minutes out of the actual 12 hours shot or edited, I'm not sure.
Toby Russell's best known for
running Eastern Heroes, which was a shop in London, or two shops, a video label and DVD label, plenty of which is still available in the shops. And they ran a magazine as well, and a video magazine. And yeah, now he runs Rare Scope. So what have you been watching, Stu, or attempted to watch prior to coming on the AudioCom?
Well, I've spent probably 45 minutes into watching Naked Ambition, starring Louis Koo and Eason Chan, which is basically two guys who seem to just work for like an upscale, some sort of business company find themselves being sacked and just figuring out what can we do now, and they actually come up with an idea with a group of other people who lost their jobs at the same building, decide to start running their own porno magazine. And after the success of the first issue, it was literally sold out by the morning it came out. And it's just basically the highs and lows of this very Category 3 orientated film. From what I've seen so far, I've not actually finished it, which I've already said, but I think it is actually not bad, and for people who have a thing for lots and lots of boobs, this is like thumbs up. Nothing else, just thumbs.
But I guess the filmmakers intended it to be a little bit more than just tits and ass.
Yeah, they do actually try to portray some sort of message, and they do actually throw in the odd familiar face. They've got one of Stephen Chow's cronies. I always forget his name. It's Tin. I was going to say Tin Car Man. Who was like the little accountant in Kung Fu Hustle, and one of the brothers in Shaolin Soccer. He's sort of like the businessman brother.
Right. I know who you mean. Blanking on his name right now.
Yeah.
Sort of a big face. He's always big face. He's shouting all the time.
It's usually his mouth that does most of the work. Oh. Like the big grins or his beady eyes. But yeah, he plays, I think he owns like a whorehouse, which gets like a little featurette in their magazine, then all of a sudden everyone's going to his whorehouse and he's over the moon about it. But of course, with a queue going all the way along Portland Street into some back alley, you can expect the police to notice something. And who else to play a police officer in a Hong Kong movie than Danny Lee?
Lisa.
So yeah, it is actually turning out to be a pretty good film.
I believe it won at least one award. If I'm not mistaken, Josie Ho, isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe she won the like a Best Supporting Actress award at the Hong Kong Film Awards. Josie Ho was probably, most people have seen her in Purple Storm. She played the girlfriend of Daniel Wu's character. She was trying to make him remember what went on in the terrorist team that they were part of in Purple Storm. And Josie Ho is really good in the movie I would like to recommend called Butterfly, a drama made a few years ago. She plays a lesbian in that.
So that's Ken's recommendation.
Yeah, we've got to get people to watch it somehow, but it's a drama, and not going off topic too much here. One of the best aspects of Butterfly is the dramatic performance by Eric Kott. Which is Mr. Wacky normally in movies, but he has one of these really restrained performances. He's the husband of Josie Ho's character. He's starting to suspect that she's attracted to someone else, and he's carrying a lot of rage. And you don't necessarily think Eric Kott is going to come off as scary, carrying that aggression, but god damn it, he's so good in that film. So that's a recommendation if you're into drama at all.
For fans of Hong Kong Legends and Dragon Dynasty, Bay Logan does have almost a supporting act in the movie. The movie basically starts off with Louis Kuz being interviewed about his success. Then the movie plays backwards on how it all began and how it works out. And Bay Logan, who is known for his audio commentaries on Hong Kong Legend DVDs as well as the new Dragon Dynasty DVDs and various cameo appearances in Gen X Cops, Dragon Squad, aka Dragon Heat.
Infernal Affairs 2.
Infernal Affairs 2 as the Caucasian cop.
And writer of Hong Kong Action Cinema, which is
yep.
An old book now, but it's a good beginner's guide to many key aspects to Hong Kong cinema, so that's a good read.
Well, Ken, seen any good films lately?
Well, let Uncle Ken tell you a story.
Uh-oh.
If anyone is familiar with my site, SoGoodReviews.com, there is a mixture of films, from the really good to the really bad to the very high to the very low. And yesterday I watched some of the utmost lows that you can get.
Was it Taiwanese crud?
No, it's actually a Hong Kong crud, category 3 rated, a film called, and I guess this says it all, Devil of Rape.
Oh.
Starring Charlie Cho, which is a mainstay of these category 3 movies from this time, playing usually a sleazeball, horny sleazeball. He's actually in Police Story, both 1 and 2, I think. He plays a lawyer in Police Story. I think Jackie Chan smashes his glasses at the end.
Yeah.
So he's always been this sleazeball, and in Category 3 movies, this very unattractive actor got his chance to do a whole lot of fucking. and that's the story of Devil of Rape. Charlie Cho being possessed by this... I didn't watch it with subtitles, actually, which didn't make a difference. He gets possessed by this rape devil, and for 90 minutes he goes around Hong Kong in his body and out of his body, and that's it. it's oddly funny to watch what they can make a feature out of. It's really just the closest thing you get to porn without the naughty bits. Alright, but it's really oddly funny that's the thing I can say about it, because they do go to some outrageous places trying to... I think the actual rape devil is manifested in one scene, and that basically looks like a ginseng root with a penis. And when you see that kind of thing, oh, this is quite something. what are you going to take this one? But you know, it's not really attractive to watch Charlie Cho like have 12 sex scenes during 90 minutes, and then it says the end. It's not really an attractive thing to watch. But as I said, oddly funny if you're into this kind of thing to see. You know, category 3 cinema was assembly line movie making as well. You know, you could get box office out of basically softcore porn during the 90s. And this is one example. Pauline Chan is in the film. She was in a lot of these, and many people have seen her actually in a Stephen Chow movie, From Beijing with Love. She played an assassin in that film. I think she even had a guns hidden in her bra or something in From Beijing with Love. She unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but she's in that film, like had two scenes just to get on the poster to have people come and watch the film, because outside of Charlie Cho there's just unknown women, but there are actually a few good faces in the supporting cast that people know of. Quan Hoi San was in Hard Boiled. He's the boss, triad boss that Tony Leung is forced to shoot in the middle of the film. Mm-hmm. And Helena Law Lam, which I'm mostly familiar with from Bullets Over Summer. She played the senile old grandmother.
Yeah.
And she's also in a lot of these Troublesome Night movies that they made about 17 of. Mm-hmm. But they don't interact basically with the porn aspect of the film. I don't think they knew what they were getting into. They shot some scenes at a house, and not recommended, but people know in Category 3 cinema, and having watched quite a few, low ones, might as well watch another one. And it's on DVD, actually.
Yeah, so we're moving on to the plug-in section of the show. This week, nothing really new. I'm plugging podcastonfire.com. I suggest everyone please send your feedback to the website, because we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to correct us on everything. Because I know from myself, I get quite a lot of shit wrong. But I didn't mess up the release date of CJ7.
Ken?
Yes, that was indeed me. And I stand corrected.
We're all out to make our mistakes anyway.
Absolutely.
So, what other sites to mention? I won't take away the thunder from everyone else, so I'll just mention my own. HKCUK.co.uk. Another good website to visit, AsianBay.co.uk. Ken, any good plugs for us this week?
Outside of the usual ones, Dragon's Den UK, PodcastOnFire.com, HKCUK.com. I'm actually going to mention two new ones here. And I think, seeing as the addresses are just a wee bit complicated, I'm going to ask Stu to put them up on the website. One is actually a site called, the title of it, Bruceploitation is a Crime, which focuses on the different Bruce Lee copies that appeared in movies throughout the 70s and a bit into the 80s. People like Bruce Lai, Bruce Le, Dragon Lee. And it's a very good site for reviews of all these extremely hokey films, including Game of Death, which probably is the hokiest one of them all, considering what they did with Bruce Lee and the way they doubled him and even had a cardboard cutout of his head sort of taped to a mirror and had the actor put his head behind that or trying... Bad illusion. But there's some really enjoyable Bruce Ploitation films. All trying to outdo themselves in the outrageous department. So do visit www.geocities.com/many_Bruces. And you'll find some fun content there. And also, true to form, there is a site out there beside mine that reviews ninja movies. And there's a German site, I believe, called Return of the Ninjas, My Weird Asia Ninja Movie Special. And I'm going to ask Stu to leave that link up in the podcast post, but that is an even longer and more complicated website address. But you'll find many reviews of these movies that we mentioned before, Ninja Demons Massacre, Ninja Terminator, Ninja the Destroyer, and Zombie vs. Ninja. But I don't think they're posting any review of Five Element Ninja, to be honest. I think they're focused on these moves that I mentioned, the ones with Westerners as ninjas with their ninja headbands.
So the trashy ninja movies.
Yeah, exactly. What gets me going. So that's two new links here that is worth a visit.
Mikey boy.
I'm obviously going to say greenfandvd.com and dragonsdenuk.com. Also, to be slightly different, rather than just plugging sites I'm involved in all the time, like Ken's done. I reckon people should check out thestumppeople.com, which is a San Francisco based, I think, or California anyway, in America based stunt team filmmakers. But you should be able to find in their article section a bunch of reviews written by Eric Jacobus, who's the main guy in the Stunt People. And his reviews are written from an action point of view, mainly. He does comment on the films, but it's mostly from somebody who choreographs scenes and films them, reviewing the action in a lot of films. And I really like his reviews. There's plenty of films that I've got into and been alerted to from reading those reviews. So that's definitely worth checking out.
I think I read a few of those, and he even reviewed movies like Her Vengeance, which is basically, again, a rape revenge film. But there is an action finale with Lam Ching Ying and Billy Chow, and also Pauline, I'm blanking on her last name, but the lead actors of that film. Really a gritty action finale, and he even focuses on the details of that finale, and comment on the film, as Mike said as well. So he doesn't just look at the pure action films, it seems.
Well, I think if he checks out, these are fairly old, the reviews are. But I think if he was checking out a film, or he'd heard that it was just a small bit of very good action, then I think it's he felt it worth writing about. Mm. Yeah, but I think, like I said, you can find some a lot of reviews of pretty rare films that are still rare nowadays. Maybe only belong VCD or not available at all, which are quite interesting to read about. Mm. Rare Korean films, that kind of stuff. Other than that, I think no, I haven't got any more plugs. I'm plugged out.
Oh well. And basically that's it, guys and gals. Podcast on Fire 7 is over with. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Ken.
Mike.
Catch us next time.